Welcome back to the Broken Middle Podcast. I'm your host, Pastor Kurt Poland. Today we're talking to Sharon Hargrave, the director of the Boone Center for the Family at Pepperdine University and a member of the teaching faculty at Fuller Seminary in the Department of Marriage and Family Therapy. COVID-19 isn't only making us sick, it's also making us stressed. And that stress can do damage to our relationships with our spouse, with our children, with our friends. Sharon and I will discuss ways of recognizing unhelpful coping strategies that we might be using to deal with that stress. And we'll explore better ways that we can be involved with each other, involved with ourselves, but also involved with God. I'm sure you'll find Sharon's wisdom reassuring and the grace that she has to offer a source of inspiration. Glad you're here. Welcome back, everybody. Today, I'm very excited to be talking to Sharon Hargrave, who is the executive director of the Boone Center for the Family at Pepperdine University. She is an affiliate faculty member in the Department of Marriage and Family Therapy. Sorry, I messed that up. Let me try that again. An affiliate faculty in the Marriage and Family Therapy Department. Okay. Right? Is that right?
Yeah.
That's an introduction. So Sharon, so great to have you this morning.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Mental health in the church. What's something you wish church leaders did more in regard to mental health?
Well, I think there's been an unfortunate trend in psychology and theology over the last several years. You know, there became a belief in the psychological community that we shouldn't be talking to people about spiritual issues, that it was even unethical if we brought up spiritual issues in the counseling room. And I think then somehow we've communicated to church leaders that they don't really have any tools to help people with those issues. So it's kind of been a let's all stay in our own lane, that the psychologists, psychiatrists, and marriage and family therapists will deal with issues. And then the pastors have kind of been given this message, you should only talk about spiritual issues. What has happened then, there's been a disconnect. So if I'm a person that's struggling with an addiction and I go to church and no one at church ever talks about having an addiction, I don't feel like I belong. What they're talking about at church isn't relevant. For instance, anxiety and depression, we've just done a major study with the Barna Group. It's called Restoring Relationships and it's available for sale on our website. But Restoring Relationships reports that, 40% of all U.S. adults and 34% of all Christians report they have a problem or it has impacted their relationship with anxiety or depression. So if I'm a church leader and I'm giving a message on Sunday morning and I'm looking at my congregation, a third of those people are directly impacted by anxiety or depression. If I never talk about it, people that are suffering from those things won't feel like they have a place. They'll feel like everybody else is perfect. They'll feel like no one else in the group suffers from anxiety or depression, and it will make church not feel as relevant. Pornography, you know, problems with marriage, problems in parenting. The more that we're, as leaders of the church, not just pastors, but as lay leaders as well, the more we're saying, man, that's a real problem. And oh, by the way, that's a problem I've dealt with. The more real we become in connecting with the people around us and the more we can resource people that make us feel like church is a place for me to heal. If I don't hear what I'm going on at church, why would I come?
And so one of the roles that we can play to start this conversation, it sounds like, is just naming that these are real issues that we struggle with. And having studies like this, I mean, I had no idea it was so high. 34%, you said, deal with anxiety and depression. That's over a third of the body of Christ. Well, So let's talk about some specifics. We are obviously recording this right in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic and quarantine. And I'm sure that people with anxiety and depression have some things that are probably causing some anxiety and depression and boredom and frustration. Mm-hmm. As a marriage and family therapist, how has quarantine been changing and challenging let's start with just marriages, the way that we relate to each other as married couples that you've seen, and what are some ways that we can give ourselves some grace but also rise to the occasion that you've seen?
And Kurt, you bring up a really big good point, and I should have clarified this. The study that I referenced that we did with Barna was before COVID.
So, wow.
Anxiety and depression have probably increased significantly. I wouldn't even want to take a guess as to what that number would be now. So as we think about COVID, we think about what is there to be anxious about. There are lots of things, real things, to be anxious about. I can be anxious about getting sick or somebody I love getting sick. I can be anxious about I'm going to lose my job or my salary's going to be cut. I can be anxious about how people are dealing with COVID. This has been a huge issue for relationships. If I'm a person that believes I should wear a mask and I'm living in the same house with a person who doesn't believe that they should wear a mask everywhere they go, huge conflict over just understanding how we're going to approach things. So when real things enter into any relationship, they're going to increase the anxiety. And as that increases the anxiety in individuals, then it increases the potential for problems in the relationship. First thing I want to say is our brain is designed in a certain way. Our brain is designed to look for danger, right? Mm. So when we feel anxious, when we initially feel anxious as we think about those things, those are good things to think about. We should be thinking about how COVID might affect our families and our jobs and everything like that. The problem is what we need to understand is that there's a fear below the anxiety that's real. The anxiety itself can be an unhealthy way to cope. So if as a spouse, I'm afraid I'm going to lose my job, I'm afraid that somebody I love is going to get sick, I will tend to live in a heightened state so that anybody that looks at me or says something to me that maybe doesn't sound right or maybe doesn't come across right, I'm going to be more apt to pounce. I'm going to be more apt to respond incorrectly with destructive coping. I'm going to be more apt to not only be aggressive in my coping responses, but I also might tend to shut down and cut off and be a withdrawer. You don't understand me. I'm not going to talk to you about this. I'm done. So we live in the same house, either heightened in irritability with each other or heightened in withdrawal and shutdown symptoms with each other. Mm-hmm. So it's understandable why we're there, because there's real things for us to be anxious about. But instead of our relationship with our spouse and our children, whether they be adult children or teenage children, being a resource, it can quickly turn into an irritant.
Wow. For those who aren't familiar with your work and the restoration model that you use, can we talk a little bit about that?
Well, a very brief discussion would be that all of us wake up every morning with two basic questions on our mind, the question of identity and the question of safety. The question of identity is, who am I? And the question of safety is, am I safe? So again, because of COVID, because of social unrest, because of everything we're dealing right now, these questions are in the forefront of a lot of our minds. And what happens is, over the years, we've created maybe answers to those questions in our own mind that maybe aren't positive. So if, for instance, I have answered the question of who am I with the question of I'm inadequate, I'm not very good at what I do, So then as my job is possibly falling apart at this moment, or I feel like I'm going to lose my job, those messages that I've been giving myself over all these years of not being adequate are louder and louder and louder. So the first thing is we have to identify that, whether it's identity, who am I, or this question of safety, again, is huge right now. Am I safe? Well, a lot of us feel like we're not safe. So what we've discovered over the years in our work in the therapy room is when people ask themselves these questions, who am I and am I safe, and they aren't giving themselves good messages, they aren't hearing good answers to those questions, they respond in one of four ways. We've seen this over and over and over in the therapy room. The first response is to be blaming, to be angry, to be aggressive, to be finger pointing, to be saying, the reason I'm not doing well is because of you. The second response is more of a shaming response, which is more the finger pointing in on yourself to say, it's all because of me, I'm doing things incorrectly, if only I hadn't been so stupid. If you're having those kind of responses, you're typically more a shamer. The third response is a controlling response, and controllers like everybody around them to do things exactly the way they want them done. They tend to be perfectionistic, they tend to be demanding, they tend to be critical, and they tend to want the world to run the way they want it to run. That's my personal favorite when I'm being destructive. And then the last response that we've understood that people have is more of an escaping response that says, if I just get out of here, things will be okay. This is a lot of where your addictions might sit or your unhealthy habits. So that's just a really brief saying the messages that we give ourselves then result a lot of times in unhealthy coping. Our brain is designed to look for danger. We just have to be more in connection with what we're telling ourselves when we feel danger.
So say that I'm feeling anxious about COVID, money is tight. I feel like the kind of lifestyle that we've gotten used to is just not going to be financially feasible. But I'm afraid to tell my spouse. I don't know how to tell the kids about it. Where do we go from that kind of situation?
Yeah, you know, a question I often think about asking clients or people that I'm working with, the question of, would you want to be living with you in this difficult time? So, you know, I think the first thing that we need to do is kind of take a step back from ourselves and just kind of review who we are. Who are we being as a spouse? Who are we being as a parent? How are we reacting to the people around us? I'm a marriage and family therapist, and so I can say this about my own profession. But for many years, we've been on an unhealthy journey in our field in communicating to people that is the job of everybody else around them to make them feel okay. So if my spouse is doing what they should be doing to make me feel okay, I'm fine. If my children are doing what they need to be doing to feel okay, then I'm fine. If my spouse and my children are not doing what they should be doing to make me feel okay, I have a right to be angry. I have a right to be upset. I have a right to be critical. It's just not the way relationships are going to work well. So I think a first thing that we need, if I'm really anxious and I know I'm snappy with everybody around me, if I'm holding information in and not telling my family or my spouse what I'm thinking, if I'm laying awake in the middle of the night and I'm just not getting sleep, which again is really affecting how well I can relate to other people relationally, those are some of the problems that I need to begin to address. And the good news is here, I don't know how many of you that are listening have ever tried to change your spouse or your children. it's not always easy. The easiest person to change in your interactions that are not going well is yourself. So as we can begin to learn to step back and say, okay, what is it that I'm doing? What is my anxiety with COVID causing me to do? What is it creating that's making me difficult in relationships? What do I need to change in order to connect to the people around me in a more positive way? That's step number one.
Yeah, that question, you know, how would you like to be stuck in quarantine with yourself? it's clarifying. So taking responsibility for how we're feeling and making it a priority to find a way of sharing how we're feeling and trusting our spouse with those emotions. I mean, that'll help us start to rise to this occasion, not just on our own, but as a married couple or as a family. Let's talk a little bit about parenting for a moment. Say money is getting tight. We're uncertain about what school's going to look like. We're a little bit on edge because we're trying to work with kids in the house. And we feel like we're running out of activities with which to occupy our kids. Sharon, help.
Well, I think one thing is that as parents, we live in a world that's not real, kind of in an illusion, if we think our kids don't know what we're worried about. They know. You know, if finances are getting tight and if I'm feeling anxious because of finance, now maybe my 2-year-old won't know that, but probably my 5-year-old will know something's going on. For sure, my 7 or 8-year-old is going to be right in there knowing that mom's concerned about her job and what's going to happen. And so trying to hide things from our children is not very effective because they'll feel it anyway. And if they don't have any ability to talk about it or nobody is addressing it directly with them, they'll start coping with unhealthy behavior as well. So, you know, I think with our children, we want to be realistic. So if I am concerned I'm going to lose my job, or I am concerned that finances are going to get tight, it's not a bad idea to have a family meeting, even with younger kids, and say, okay, we as a family need to be creative. We need to come up with some ideas on what we could do to save money. What are some thoughts you guys have? Because if kids can be a part of the solution, that's so good, because they're learning how to solve problems. You know, you're teaching your 8-year-old that someday when they get into a financial bind, because they probably will, you're beginning to teach them fiscal responsibility as you sit around together as a family and, you know, work to solve that problem. If you're running out of activities, if you feel like you're running out of activities, for instance, one thing I would say to parents is you're taking on too much responsibility. Let your kids help plan what the activities might be. You know, look at your 3-year-old or your 4-year-old and say, what do you want to do today? Or say, you know, here's 4 things that we've done in the last 2 weeks. We drew on the sidewalk with chalk. We went on a walk. We made some cookies together. And we played with Play-Doh. Which one of those 4 things would you like to do today? And then the child will feel the sense of empowerment that they can look back at these 4 choices and you're thinking, they don't want to do that again. But you offer it to them in that format and they'll feel the sense of empowerment to say, okay, I can make a choice. I think I want to draw on the sidewalk with chalk. And they'll do that. Your teen is bored out of their mind. They don't know what to do next. You know, with a teen, for instance, I would look at a teen and I would say, man, this is really getting hard to be in quarantine. This is getting tough. Acknowledge the difficulty of the situation. Say, what are some ideas that you have? Things that we could do that would be helpful to you. Give them voice. Help them solve problems. If your teen looks back at you and says, I don't know, and say, you know what? I don't know either. Let's both give it some thought and try again in a little bit. Don't feel like you have to solve in and make everything okay for your kids. You know, a thing at our house, we have had fast food twice since March 18th, or takeout food, let me put it that way. We are getting tired of coming up with what to eat. But the more we can talk about that, there's four people in my household right now, the more we talk about it together, the more we're a little creative to say, well, we have had chicken, grilled chicken six times, but maybe if we threw barbecue sauce on the grilled chicken this time, it would create a kind of different feeling meal. So I think this whole working together to solve the problems that we're facing is really powerful for both spouses and for families. Don't feel like it's your job as the head of the house or your job as the parent to solve all the problems, because if you're doing that, you're missing a great opportunity to help teach your kids how to live life. We have a vice president at Pepperdine. Her name is Connie Horton. Connie is one of our presenters in an upcoming conference that we're going to do. She talks on parenting. But one message that she gave her children growing up consistently is, you can do hard things. And her daughter will tell her now that one of her mom-isms that she has up on her mirror on a sticky note is the phrase, you can do hard things. And we want to begin to teach our children at an early age that they can do hard things and they're going to be fine. And they're actually going to feel a lot of self-worth out of learning that they can solve a problem.
Wow. You can do hard things. I feel like that would be a good sermon title.
It would be, Kurt. I mean, how many times have you had to tell yourself that over the last several weeks as you've had to transfer everything that you do to an online format? It has not been easy for church leaders.
And it makes me grateful for the wider network of support that we've got, that the pastor doesn't have to be in that position to try to solve everybody's problems, but that we can do hard things together as a church. To round out this conversation, we've talked about marriage, we've talked about children. Let's talk about the church now. What are ways that that we can be emotionally supportive, even psychologically supportive to each other in this time? What have you seen that works, and what would you recommend?
Well, I heard a really sad story yesterday about a church that surprisingly, or maybe really a wonderful makeup of this church, was the fact that they had people that crossed the political spectrum from extremely conservative to extremely liberal people that had been in a congregation together for years. The recent conversations over COVID and over social unrest have split the church. And the pastor was telling my husband he doesn't think they'll ever be able to mend some of the things that have happened during this time. And to me, that's a really sad story, because we as the church should be offering peace to the world right now and not contributing to the chaos. I have a handout I'll send you as well, Kurt. I just pulled up several verses out of scripture that talk about peace. You know, Christ tells us that he will bring us peace. John 16:33, I've told you these things so that in them you may have peace. In this world, you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against these things, there is no law. Galatians 5:22. Colossians 3, therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, Clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive one another if any of you has a grievance. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. And here it is. Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, since as members of one body, you were called to peace. You know, we aren't all going to agree on some of these major issues that we're facing right now. We are not all going to believe that coronavirus should be handled in the exact same way. There's too much information out there that's contradictory and that's not helpful. How to heal from the issues of social justice. We're not going to all agree. But the way that we're going to get through all this is to listen to each other's story, to be calm, to be a peaceful presence in the midst of a storm. And I think as a church, as we walk out into the community, we have an opportunity every day for people to look at us and say, wow, that person, that congregation, those people, they seem so calm. They seem like they really understand these issues that we face. We don't want to ignore issues. We don't want to ignore marriage problems. We don't want to ignore parenting problems. We don't want to pretend they don't exist. We don't want to pretend like we don't have problems with anxiety or depression, or if unfortunately we've gotten caught up in some sort of addiction. We do not want to ignore these things. But because of our relationship with Christ, we have the ability to step into any problem and know that Christ is with us as people of peace.
You know? It's as though sometimes in church we feel pressure to be, to present as calm and collected and calm, collected, and Christian when mm-hmm. we're not feeling like we're any of those things. Yeah. And so perhaps one of the ways that we can better serve each other, and that we can really organize the leadership of the church and the way we preach and the way we teach is to acknowledge that all of these struggles with anxiety, with parenting, with being a good partner in quarantine while we're not feeling up to the task. If we can name them, it's like Fred Rogers used to say that feelings are mentionable and manageable.
Yeah.
Well, as a parting word of encouragement, you're standing in the pulpit. You're about to give the benediction to the church you're doing Zoom church, but you're about to give the Zoom church benediction. What blessing do you send the church off with as we go into this coming week?
I think the whole concept's at the end of Romans 8, that nothing can separate us from the love of God. I think about the concept that just because we are in pain or we are feeling distress, it does not mean that we can't also simultaneously feel peace at the same time. So I think it's this exhortation of going with confidence that God is with us, both through things that feel like amazing blessings and things that feel like incredible hardships. God is with us and nothing can separate us from him and his love. And we have a great message to share with the rest of the world in a time when almost everybody is feeling some sort of pain or suffering from what is going on currently. So that would be my benediction. Thanks for having me here today. I just enjoyed it. Yeah.
I appreciate you making the time, and I know that there are going to be folks in the church who really benefit from what we've talked about today.
Great. Thanks so much.
You've been listening to the Broken Middle Podcast, and I'm your host, Pastor Kurt Poland. Thanks for taking a step out into the open with us. We'll look forward to seeing you next week.